97.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Bickley and Murata.
Yeah.
I was like just about to say something, I heard you, and I was like, did I say that without realizing it?
Did you say, yeah? This reminds you of being in the club?
Yeah, obviously. All the music you play reminds me of my hard clubbing times. It is hour number three of the show, and I want to stick with the Cardinals here. Darren Urban mentioned this when you brought it up to him last segment, Jarrett. Luke Lipinski, Jarrett Carlin, and for Bickley and Murata. You brought up the potential split between Chase Edmonds and James Conner, and how we really haven't seen that very much in the like the first year when Cliff Kingsbury was here. Are you still remixing? Sorry.
I thought I stopped that.
It feels like one of those, like when we play a clip from SportsCenter and they're just like Brian Windhorst is talking about Devin Booker, and then there's just disco and EDM music in the background.
That's one of my biggest pet peeves in the world, and I know they do it for television. They don't factor in us radio guys.
Yeah.
But it'll be like Adrian Wojnarowski, and it'll be like, yes, it's going to be a big offseason for the Phoenix Suns as they have a group of people they need to deal with. I mean, Chris Paul first and foremost, and they have a lot of free agents that they... And if you really want to... And then he's like shouting over highlights.
It's true. And the behind the scenes too here for the radio station for people that are listening is pretty much anytime one of us plays one of those clips and they go into the EDM music with the highlight, we all just start dancing like we are DJing. Yeah. And you're right, it'll be Woj talking about like players that are about to get like a coach that just got fired, and we're all just dancing to EDM music. No, but you brought up how there really hasn't been a split in the 2 years that Kingsbury's been here. Or like there hasn't been a running back by committee. If there has, one of the running backs is Kyler Murray.
Right, and there hasn't been a running back by committee even in times where it desperately called for it, like where you needed to find out what you had with David Johnson or Chase Edmonds at the end of a season that didn't really matter.
And it was just all Kenyon Drake all the time.
Or when Chase Edmonds was red hot and Kenyon Drake was running straight to the sidelines.
It was all Kenyon Drake all the time.
You know what I mean, though?
Yeah.
So that's why it's very intriguing that they're going into the season with not a very clear number one. Darren Urban says he thinks Chase Edmonds will be the starter. I think we both probably think that.
Yeah.
But he doesn't feel like a 25 carry a guy or, you know, 25 touch a game guy. At least he hasn't really been his career.
He doesn't feel like the guy that's going to be like the just traditional fantasy football bell cow running back, you know, like Adrian Peterson in his prime where he's getting all the carries. Or like with the Titans now, Derrick Henry just gets every carry. But Darren Urban said this last segment with Chase Edmonds, it's probably you have to factor in what he does in the receiving game as well. And Chase Edmonds said something similar yesterday.
For me personally, I don't think it's a carry type of thing. I think for me it's a touch type of thing because I feel like with my unique ability, whether it's 15 touches and that's 10 carries, 5 grabs, or if it's, you know, 18 touches and that's 9 carries, 9 grabs, I think with me, getting me in the open field and finding a way to just specialize with my mismatching linebackers is really how I really feel like I'm the best type of football player at that point. So, I'm not really worried about the carries as per se, just the touches. And I feel like, you know, Coach Cliff, he's going to obviously specialize in that. We got a lot of talent on the offense, and we're going to have to find a way to spread the wealth a little bit. But, again, that's what makes football so great in team sport.
Boy, those are the best running backs, at least for fantasy football, aren't they? Because they still get the touches. They're through the air, so they're usually bigger gains, and they don't get beaten down just running between the tackles all game.
And if you're in a what's it called? A
PPR?
Wow. PPR, it's, wow.
How long has it been since
feels
you
like
played
it's been a long
football
time. I don't know. I was going to say PPO. I think that's something to do with your insurance.
Well, I don't. I guess, to be fair, I didn't know where you were going there, so I'll let you just take it in any direction. Well, if you're talking about fantasy football, it's a PPR league, though.
I'm sorry, but when I hear the words PP, I can't think of anything.
You only take a tinkle.
That's all I can think of now.
I feel like you only have like 5 audio bits back there on that computer.
5? I could go through literally hundreds. Literally hundreds.
But I don't think you have any that, like, you only play 5. Like, it's just that one. It's just
take your analytics and shove them right up your rectum. Right up your, jam it up! I'm tired of it!
I have that one.
Yeah. Not surprising.
It also feels like, though, that they haven't really utilized the running back in the passing game as much as they should.
Not as much as you would think.
Like that was something they never unlocked with David Johnson, which we always thought would be really valuable.
Yeah, because even when he was bad, he could still catch.
Right. And while I think you said what Chase Edmonds was third on the team in catches last year.
He was one behind Fitz.
It wasn't like they ran these brilliantly designed, you know, swing passes or screen passes and broke really big plays. At least they didn't do it enough. So, I mean, if they're going to divide the touches up, like let's say that you know Chase Edmonds gets 20 touches, but you know,
like
six of those are passes, or
yeah.
10 and 10, or and then James Conner gets maybe like 12 carries. That could be an interesting way to do it, but we haven't even seen him go that far.
It does. It makes the most sense. And I guess 10 and 10 would be ridiculous, but like 15, I don't know. Let's say like maybe 17 touches a game for Chase Edmonds, and it's 12 on the ground and 5 through the air or whatever, and then Conner maybe gets 15, 16 carries or something. But you're right. They haven't done that.
But do you think that is what's missing in the offense also? Or is the Cliff Kingsbury, this style of offense, just something that doesn't use or depend on the running back?
And that's why, getting back to the conversation yesterday, I think that most people agree with this, that Cliff Kingsbury is more so in a position where if this team really struggles this year, he could lose his job going into next season, and Steve Keim could stick around. Because if you're Steve Keim, you could say, okay, I've given you the pieces to make your offense work. And in fairness to Steve Keim, like, I know that he's botched stuff in the past, but the offense they're running out there this season now, with Kyler Murray obviously as your quarterback, and then you've got DeAndre Hopkins, who he just stole from Houston, and you've got A.J. Green and Christian Kirk with Rondale Moore pushing, and maybe even Fitz as your receivers, and you've got a decent offensive line now with D.J. Humphries and Rodney Hudson and those other pieces in place too, and now you've given him Chase Edmonds and James Conner as two running backs to work with.
It feels like they have a lot of weapons.
They do. This offense really should be humming along this season, and it just wasn't balanced last year, like, at all. Larry Fitzgerald and Chase Edmonds were the two and three receivers on the team, and their combined receptions weren't even as much as DeAndre Hopkins had. Like, it was just Hopkins and Kyler running last year, and it
but
can't
why?
Be that.
Like, why did that happen? That's the thing that obviously the coaching staff is in charge of figuring out, and the offense itself. But why was it so heavy to DeAndre Hopkins? Is that a Cliff thing and a play design thing, or is that a Kyler Murray thing?
That's what I'm saying. We're going to find out.
The fact that they didn't lean heavily on the run, is that a play design thing, a play calling thing, or is that just the offensive line wasn't giving up holes? Is that they fell behind in games and they couldn't run as much as they wanted?
But it feels like they've isolated the coaching this year, doesn't it? Because all these things you're throwing out there are legit potential explanations, but they've kind of shored them up. Like, okay, it's the offensive line. Well, we just went out and got Rodney Hudson. So if it doesn't work this year, we're not blaming the offensive line. Maybe I didn't have enough running backs. Maybe Kenyon Drake wasn't as good as we thought. We didn't have it. Okay, well, now you've got Chase Edmonds and James Conner. Like, I get that it's not Derrick Henry and Dalvin Cook, but it's two pretty complementary pieces, at least on paper. And you've got at least, you should be able to find two receivers behind DeAndre Hopkins you can throw to. So it almost feels like if the offense isn't amazing this year, that's going to fall on Cliff. That's the nuance that Darren Urban was talking about last segment, is it's like you could sneak into the playoffs, but the offense still isn't taking a step forward, and then you get bounced in the first round, and they may still look at Cliff. Or the offense could just be absolutely dominant. They could have injuries on defense and miss the playoffs, and it's like, well, Cliff's doing his job, you know? That's why I think this season, there's no excuses after it for Kingsbury, but I also think, I mean, he's got the pieces in place. He should be able to prove himself.
I know. I think you put him as the guy feeling the most pressure this season, and it's going to come down to that. Again, though, like I just said, though, designing the perfect play or calling the perfect play still goes to the players having to make
execute
it happen
the play, yeah.
Yeah, on the field.
You're starting to sound like Steve Wilkes, where every week it was, oh, it was just lack of execution.
and
that didn't go over as well with the players.
What was it, the gap integrity?
Yeah, that was on defense, yeah. You got to have gap. You have to maintain gap integrity.
You don't have your gap integrity. What do you have in this life?
You don't have much. You certainly don't have your pride. This is Chase Edmonds, and he was asked about being the RB1 for the Cardinals. They didn't really necessarily like that.
One thing that we already talked about in our room was that, honestly, I hate the term RB1. I feel like for me personally, just my first years coming in here, it was always kind of the reason where I felt like, you know, I was already kind of the short end of the stick type of deal. I always felt like in football, you get what you deserve, and everyone in that room is going to get and earn whatever they do out in training camp. And that's one thing that we talked about, and we just talked about, but really in our room, you know, being as selfish as possible in terms of your work ethic and your work habits. And then obviously when each of us is on the field, obviously we're your best friend, we're cheering for you, but really it's a competition, man. You got to earn your role in this league and on this team.
RB1.
Jared, are you aware you have a piece of paper stuck to your
RB1.
Face? Okay.
What combo do I order when I want the beef and cheddar with fries?
Wow.
The RB1. Somebody tweeted us, Bickley_Murata, and they said, if they do make Chase Edmonds the running back one and they do feed him more carries, and we've kind of seen this in the few opportunities he has had in his career to be the RB1,
mm-hmm.
They hope he doesn't turn into Andre Ellington, somebody who showed flashes of, and so much potential when used in short bursts, but any time that they got a big opportunity, they either got overused and they broke down,
mm-hmm.
or they just couldn't give it to you in the bigger sample sizes.
I think, unfortunately, that's sort of just the reality of being running back in the NFL, right? I mean, Derrick Henry.
Well, I mean, yeah, there's very few Derrick Henrys.
He's like a linebacker. He's like a big linebacker that just happens to be really fast and is a running back. But a lot of running backs will break down over the course of the season. Chase Edmonds, along those lines, did say he put on muscle this offseason.
Yeah. So I tried to put on a few pounds, lean out a little bit. That was my main focus. And then obviously my secondary focus is really just improving my receiving ability even more.
How much did you put on?
Just like 2 or 3 pounds. Like, to me, it might not sound a lot to the outside world, but to me, it's enough to get the job done for me. So I'm at about 205 right now.
Also, I talked about this earlier in the show.
I put on like 6 or 7 pounds this offseason.
Oh, you could be the RB1.
Yeah.
Or did you put it on eating RB1s?
I did a combo of it, so that I did a combo with a combo.
Oh, okay. I don't know if that's good or bad. I do think Edmonds is going to evolve into being one of the leaders in the locker room, don't you? I mean, James Conner could, I guess, be that guy too. I don't know.
Well, it's hard for somebody to come in, and it's also hard for somebody to come in their first year.
Yeah.
When you're at best splitting carries.
And Edmonds has been here now for a little while, and he's been a voice in that locker room since
longer,
he was a rookie.
I feel like he's one of the longer tenured guys on the offense, especially without Fitz there.
I guess it is true, huh? He hasn't been here that long, but yeah. He was a voice in his first year, but yeah, I mean, he's even been here longer than Kyler. So 3 years instead of two.
I mean, Chase is one of those guys, as I kind of was implying, that has tantalized us throughout his entire career, and that he's one of the guys that almost all Cardinals fans have said at one point, boy, I'd like to see more of him. Boy, I wish they used him more. Boy, I wish they figured out a way to take advantage of all his gifts. Or, when he did get a chance to play, boy, he looks so much better than David Johnson right now. Boy, he looks so much better than Kenyon Drake right now. I wonder why they don't use him more. This is a kind of a prove-it season for him as much as it is for the offense to prove that they know how to use him.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that. I mean, it's a prove-it season, not in the sense that he belongs in the NFL, but he's going to kind of prove what role he essentially should be in, I guess, is maybe the best way to put it. I mean, I'm trying to think back to the year when they went out and got Kenyon Drake. It was essentially because Chase Edmonds got hurt, remember? I mean, remember the whole Matthew Berry debacle where he was like livid with the Cardinals because they didn't play David Johnson and instead they played Chase Edmonds, and Edmonds had 3 touchdowns in that game against the Giants. The Cardinals won that game. I mean, that's, as Cliff Kingsbury, you're like, okay, it's my first year as an NFL head coach. I'm getting criticism for winning. Screw you! So you do remember it.
Yeah, that was... Remember that?
I remember that. But then remember Chase Edmonds got hurt, and so they ended up having to scramble to get a running back for Thursday Night Football against the 49ers, and that's why Kenyon Drake got here. Otherwise, we might already have the answers to these questions. But to your point, Jared, that year, his Chase Edmonds carries were... So he ended up playing in 10 games. His carries were 1, 1, 3, 6, 8, 5, 27... 7-1-1. So it's like he's not, I mean, you feed the guy when he has 3 touchdowns, 126 yards, but he's probably not a 20 carry a game guy. Otherwise, and maybe most running backs aren't in 2021.
Yeah, and do they need a 20-carry a game guy? They need a 25-carry a game guy.
They shouldn't if both those guys are healthy. Now, the problem is if one of those guys gets hurt.
Who's their third string guy?
I think it's not
Eno.
Do
they have any of the ASU running backs left?
I mean, they have. I think they technically still have Eno. I thought it was Jonathan Ward who would technically be their third string
Jonathan
guy.
Ward got like one carry last year and looked really good.
Yeah. They're just saving him. They don't want to
over load management.
Yeah, load management. So
two, maybe get two carries
maybe
this
two
year.
Or three, yeah.
Build it up.
It scares me when we think along the same lines. I want to play this cut too from Chase Edmonds, and this may lead us into a separate discussion here. But he was, of course, asked about Larry Fitzgerald, and you know it was like, okay, have you talked to Fitz? What's he saying?
Nah, I don't ask Larry that, man. I kind of let him do his own thing. He's a grown man. He's been around the block a few times. Whenever he's ready, I'm sure he'll have a decision made.
Okay, so that was expected. Here's the other one, though.
It was different. Actually, I was going to text a group message that we got going on, me, him, Kirk, and Trent, just tell them, boys, we miss them. We in our usual rooms, and Larry's room is usually on the far right, and it's not the same right now, so I'm going to give him a hug, holler.
So, going back to the line of thinking that, you know, either Fitz maybe gets talked into coming back if they have an injury at that position, or I know a lot of people are like, maybe he still does want to come back. They just can't meet his number right now. Wouldn't you say a lot of his value right now would be in training camp of being that guy? Like, he means so much to this group off the field as well that, like, some of his value to the Cardinals is missing. Like, if he shows up, but it's right before week one, it's fine. It's Fitz. Nobody's going to complain. But, like, some of his value is with these younger guys that look up to him, and he's just, like,
true,
a fun guy to be around, too.
Yeah, of course, of course. But it's also one thing about him, especially through the later part of his career, is he really did not like the practice and the grind part of football.
Yeah.
He still loved playing in the games, which you see a lot with veterans in the NFL. But, I mean, even during the seasons, he would have veterans' days off, you know, in the middle of the week and stuff like that. I don't, he would barely play in the preseason games and stuff like that. So I know what you're saying about the added value that he could bring, but that might just be, you know, off the field talking to guys. I don't know necessarily it's that he's always professional and he always practices hard when he does practice, but I think he just dislikes it so much at this point in his career that's a lot to ask of him. Even if he was back, I think they would be limiting his training camp reps anyway.
Yeah, I agree with that, but just having him around the team I think is a good thing. And it's
well, I've proposed this and Chase sort of implied it in that soundbite you played. Whenever you hear Steve Keim or Michael Bidwell or Cliff Kingsbury or any of the players, and they always say, "Oh yeah, I talked to Cliff. I haven't asked him about his future.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really talk." Maybe he's just been sitting there for 6 months waiting for somebody to ask him if he's coming back.
Yeah,
I'm dying to play, guys. Just ask me.
If it were Aaron Rodgers, that might be true, right? He's like, "Hey, why isn't anybody asking me?"
Yeah.
The one other thing,
Fred Couples, it's on your shoulders now.
The next golf podcast that Fitz is on. No, I don't think that he would be out there like, you're right. I mean, they would limit his reps in camp. And it's not, this team's not going to get halfway through the season and be like, you know, if Fitz had been here in camp, we'd be so much better. It's not that. It's just, I think just having him around is a boost for the team. If he's retiring, then that's, you know, that's his call. But if he ends up coming back like one day before the season starts, also his call. He's earned it. And though they should welcome him back with open arms, but I think part of Fitz's value at this point in his career is what he just brings morale-wise, being around the team. And you've been out to camp before. I mean, when Fitz, it's like a tradition here in the Valley. When Larry Fitzgerald makes a catch in training camp, the entire, any crowd that's there, that just goes crazy. He'd be a two-yard out.
I thought you were going to say it's a tradition for him to sneak up on Wolf and tackle him from behind during camp.
I hope he still does that even if he's not playing. Like, wouldn't that be
that
a great
would be
way
a surprise
if Fitz announced he was coming back by just shoestring tackling Ron Wolfley on the sidelines?
I think it would be if he announced nothing, if he didn't show up through all training camp, and then all of a sudden one day Wolf just gets tackled from behind by Larry.
Yeah,
and then Larry leaves, and that's the,
oh, that's
that's
it.
All he does.
See, that would be great. But even better would be if he did that and people were like, why did Wolf just go, oh, because Fitz tackled. Oh, because Fitz is back, like in full gear, and he's just out there. That's how he announces he's coming back.
That would be cool.
That would be really cool. I hope he's not listening to a golf podcast right now. I hope he's listening to this and he's like, that's a brilliant idea. Or I hope he just already had the idea. One more from Chase Edmonds. This this is one that you've probably seen quoted a little bit, but talking about what is on the line for this team this season and what exactly happened down the stretch last year.
Well, it's definitely playoffs. I mean, we're just going to obviously address the elephant in the room. We felt like we were very disappointed just how the season ended last year. You know, to come out, be 6-3, just from the outside of you, yes, obviously it looks like you have pretty good chances to get to the playoffs. And kind of we put it on ourselves. We folded, you know, point blank period. We got to be better. And so we're just going to come into work every single day.
Even anytime I just hear 6-3, it's still like the Cardinals. It felt like they were on top of the world after the Hail Mary to go 6-3, and then it was just rapidly downhill from there. Because you beat Buffalo too, who is one of the very best teams in the league, and you beat him in the most, maybe not the most convincing fashion, but like the most dramatic fashion
right.
possible.
But it is interesting what context that takes now that you have the whole context.
Yeah,
because now it looks like. They got a miraculous win that they shouldn't have got.
Yeah.
And that the games now surrounding that game show that they were already in free fall when that game happened, mm-hmm. and they just got a once-in-a-lifetime play to pull out the win rather than something that, like, got them back on track and propelled them into the postseason.
Yeah, that's a great point. And it was funny because when that happened, too, it was like they're 6-3. Nobody can stop them because even if you're like of the belief now looking back, like, okay, they got lucky to win that game, they were still hanging with Buffalo. Like, they were still in the game within a score as time's winding down. And Buffalo might win the Super Bowl this year. And they were right there last year.
That Monday, until the Suns playoff run,
yeah,
was probably the peak of Arizona sports. Because that Monday, if I'm remembering correctly, was also when they traded for Chris Paul. The day after the Hail Mary.
Ooh, yeah, I think you might be right. And it was the feeling of this Cardinals team can't lose even when they're not playing their best. The thought was they could throw to DeAndre Hopkins in any scenario and he's going to catch the ball. What did he say? It was a greater catch by eye?
That's right. Greater catch by eye.
And then they proceeded to go 2-5 down the stretch. And it was just like it was excruciating the last two games where it was like, okay, just win one of these. We'll forgive what has happened since the Hail Mary. Just win one of these games, even if you're stumbling into the playoffs. And then we're watching Chris Streveler throw passes to the LA Rams in week 17. I mean, what was so inexcusable at the end of last season, and it's essentially what Chase Edmonds just sort of said right there. The Cardinals missed the playoffs last season because their offense couldn't get anything done in the last two games. And this team is built around its offense.
Right. But how much of that was Kyler Murray being not the same after he got hurt?
I'm sure a lot of it was that.
And if a lot of it was that, then can you really judge much of how they finished the season?
Not if they followed up this season with like a really strong offensive season, then yeah, whatever. Then that's just he was hurt. And I do tend to agree with him when we're talking about the balance of this offense and the balance of the running game. As much as it's one of the most fun things about watching the Cardinals, maybe just NFL in general, is Kyler Murray taking off and just breaking off a 20-yard run that he might go for 80. Like, you don't know, right? But I do kind of agree with him. They need to... That shouldn't be a focal point of the offense. It should be a weapon that you have that other teams don't have that you go to a few times throughout a game. But it shouldn't be like, okay... Here's the running plays for Chase Edmonds. Here's the running plays for Kyler Murray. This is how we're going to run the ball. You know what I mean? It should be like, good luck tackling him. If you force him outside the pocket, he'll just burn you for 30
yards. Yeah, I mean, the Kyler Murray run plays work best when you're not expecting them.
Yes, even when the Cardinals aren't expecting them. It's just when
Kyler Murray's not expecting
them. He's just like, I don't know, I just took off and ran for 30 yards.
Total chaos. I somehow was absolutely correct about the timing of that Hail Murray and the Chris Paul trade.
Look at that. So that was the best. That was the best day in Arizona sports until
the playoff run,
until
right?
Until the Suns took off. Yeah. What was that? What was the actual
November 16th?
It was definitely the best day of 2020.
Monday, November 16th. Well, there was a really good edition of Guest Jarrett's Soup sometime
yeah,
over
I'm,
the summer.
I'm sure there was. Yeah. You guys played a lot of rousing rounds of Guest Jarrett's Soup.
Yes.
All right. We come back.
It was a different time.
It was. Thankfully,
it was a soupier time.
It was a soupier time. When we come back, we'll get back into the Aaron Rodgers stuff. He spoke at length.
And he spoke, and he spoke, and he spoke 29 minutes.
He's probably still speaking to somebody right now, just not on the record. That is next. Luke Lipinski, Jarrett Carlin, in for Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
I think we can all understand, Green Bay isn't you know, a huge vacation destination. People are coming here to play with me, to play with our team, and knowing that they can win a championship here.
Wow. Gotta say, I didn't expect that. And to be fair, he did. He sort of qualified it.
Yeah, I mean, I think hearing it, it's not as dramatic.
Stuff usually looks worse in print, especially slightly out of context, but that's not great. Like, there's no way to spin that as, like, a good thing going into this season. Because at that point, you're kind of flipping.
Almost everything he said in this 29-minute press conference is not a good way to spin. I mean, if you're a Packers fan, you're very happy that he's playing because he's really good. He's the defending MVP.
Yeah.
And 1,000 times he gives you a better chance at winning this season than anybody else they could have brought in or promoted.
Than anybody else in the league other than, like, Mahomes and Brady.
Yeah. And even, like, other than, equal to probably those two guys.
Yeah.
But, boy, he spends just 29 minutes, all the things he doesn't like about the organization, about the way the team is constructed, about the way the team has handled past things, everything. One thing that this press conference showed, and we'll play some more cuts from it, but was that the media's reporting and discussion about this over the last few months was not exaggerated.
Yeah, that's true.
He pretty much backed up everything that they said. Every rumor about how he was upset with, you know, the personnel moves. He was upset with not being involved more. He was upset about how and when they gave him they offered him a contract extension. Just a lot of stuff. And he reiterated here that, yes, he actually did. Let me make sure this is the right thing to play before I play it.
You're testing it on the air? I thought you were going to test it on the air. I just, there's a difference. I get that he wasn't, like, sitting there trying to rip the city of Green Bay. Look, Aaron Rodgers, again, he's been a fan favorite there for 16 years. His entire career has been with that team. Whether you think he should have won more Super Bowls or not because of the people around him, and I do think that they kind of let him down at certain points, not the players, but the front office and the former coach, he still has won a Super Bowl there, and he's going to go down in history as one of the very short list of greatest quarterbacks in league history, and at least the first 17 years were in Green Bay, so it just feels weird for him to say anything that even kind of
everything
is a slight to the city. The organization, I get it, but the city, it's like, city's there for you, you know?
Yeah, but, I mean, what, are people going to go to the Cheese Museum or something?
No,
I mean,
he's not wrong.
He's not wrong.
I mean, I've never been to Green Bay. Maybe it's like Atlantis, and I don't know because I haven't seen it.
I will say this. At least their uniforms are green.
Yeah, that's true.
Bowling Green University's colors are brown and orange.
Yeah.
That always upset me.
It was like they were just trying to... They're either taking a stand and be like, no, man, you want us to be green, so exactly. We're going to be the exact opposite, or they just could not find it on the color wheel.
That could be it, too. But one other thing that was rumored, and everyone's like, no, is that he actually considered retiring. That this whole situation was so bad, and then he so did not want to play for the Packers that he would retire after an MVP season with a chance to win a Super Bowl. And this is what he said about that today.
In the last few months, when you seriously considered retirement at this point, you might have, and at what point did you change your mind or decide to actually come back?
Yeah, that was definitely something I thought about. I talked about how important being a full-timer was for a long time. This was the first time to spend the off season away without a COVID year or a lockout year. And I enjoyed it. You know, I really did. I took time working on myself and trying to better myself in a number of areas where I feel like I could improve based on my own patterns and conditioning. And it was a lot of growth in that process. I continued to find joy and happiness and things off the field. However, there's still a big competitive hole in my body that I need to fill. And as I got back into my workouts, I just realized that I know I can still play, and I want to still play. And as long as I feel like I can give 100% to the team, then I should still play.
Do you think there's any way if, like, let's say Matt LaFleur down by 8 in the closing minutes of the NFC Championship doesn't decide, I'd rather lose by 5 than try and tie this game, and doesn't kick a field goal for no conceivable reason. It's still one of the most strange decisions I've ever seen, not just in sports, but anywhere. Let's say that they actually come back, they win that game, and they win the Super Bowl. Do you think that makes it more likely that Rodgers would have just walked away? Because then you really are going out on top. You're league MVP, you won the Super Bowl, and you're absolutely sticking it to the Packers. Like, hey, he feels like he was mistreated. Hey, you didn't value me. Okay, I won MVP, I won you a Super Bowl, and now you're going to be 3-13 with Jordan Love. Like, the very next year.
You know, I don't know, because the only time that's ever happened is with Carson Palmer. Everybody else, it gets to a certain point, and they realize, whether it's because they're giving up too much money, whether whatever, if you believe what Aaron Rodgers just said, he's still so competitive.
Yeah.
That it's really hard to just walk away when you're on top.
Well, Elway. Didn't Elway do it? Didn't Elway finally win his 2 Super Bowls and then retire?
Yeah, but he
was at the end of his career.
At the end of his career. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people say Terrell Davis is what really, you know, led them to those Super Bowls. He wasn't coming off an MVP season like Aaron Rodgers. It wasn't, people were saying, like, wow, he has so much more. I mean, maybe the closest to that, when Kurt Warner retired here.
Yeah.
People thought that, like, boy, he really could still go it. He was coming off a very good year and a good playoffs.
When are we going to watch the Kurt Warner movie?
Boy, I don't know, man. Did you see the trailer for it?
I haven't seen the trailer for it yet.
Yeah. It looks like a movie.
Okay.
I like the guy playing Kurt Warner. He was in a couple of seasons of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
I've never seen that. Zachary Levi?
Zachary Levi.
Apparently Sarah has seen it.
Of course.
I haven't. He was Chuck, wasn't he? He was
either Chuck or he was Ed.
He was Chuck. I think he was Chuck. He was Chuck, and now he's Kurt Warner.
Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, though. You need to watch it if you haven't.
Give me, like, what's it about?
It's about the marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Okay, I'm obviously.
Who builds up her comedy career.
It's about a housewife.
And she is marvelous.
It's about a housewife in the late 50s, early 60s, New York City, whose marriage falls apart and she becomes a stand-up comedian.
I got to say, Sarah sold me more based on her.
The Kurt Warner movie, American Underdog, is set to come out December 10th.
All right. I'm going to watch it. 100%.
I'm going to watch it. I think everybody in, even though it looks like it ends before he gets to Arizona.
Oh.
Looks like it peaks with the Rams Super Bowl.
Maybe this is just the prequel.
Setting up the sequel.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Hey. Prequel to the sequel.
Who would play Ron Wolfley in the sequel?
Craig Wolfley? Wouldn't it be just funny if Wolf played himself in the Kurt Warner sequel?
Sometimes they do. People, you know, announcers usually you see, like, to play themselves in these movies.
Yeah.
So maybe Dave Pasch will get some sweet money after he got cut out of Batman vs. Superman.
We should, one of these, like, what's going to have to be, I don't know.
We
should cast the next Kurt Warner movie one of these days.
Absolutely agree.
Also, Sarah was not in the booth.
This is a tremendous social studies question for tomorrow.
But Sarah, what do you think of our idea that Larry Fitzgerald announces his return to the Cardinals by just tackling Ron Wolfley on the sidelines, coming from out of nowhere in
full
gear?
Sees him until he tackles Wolf from behind like he usually does.
Yeah.
I think it's perfect.
But he's in full gear, so then he just runs right out there on the field.
And he's ready to play.
Yeah. I'm not sure what the rules with the COVID social distancing is this season, so I don't know if he could do that or not.
We'll get him tested before.
I'm sure you can.
He already had
people.
COVID anyway. Fitz did.
Yeah.
All right, let me just play one more Aaron Rodgers before we get to break, because it's kind of a lengthy one. But this is how he started the press conference.
Well, this was 12 minutes, right? This is not the whole thing.
What?
His first answer
was
12 minutes?
This is part of his first answer.
Okay.
A lot of things have transpired. This wasn't a draft day thing, you know. This was started with a conversation in February at the season ended. And I just expressed, you know, my desire to be more involved in conversations that directly affected my job. I wanted to help the organization maybe learn from them some of the mistakes in the past, in my opinion, about the way that some of the outgoing veterans were treated, and just the fact that we didn't retain a number of players that I felt like were core players to our foundation, our locker room, high character guys. I'm talking about Charles Woodson, Jordy Nelson, Julius Peppers, Clay Matthews, Randall Cobb, James Jones, John Kuhn, Brett Goode, T. TJ Lang, Brian Bulaga, Casey Hayward, Micah Hyde, guys who were, you know, exceptional players for us, but great locker room guys, high character guys. Many of them who weren't offered a contract at all, or were extremely lowballed, or were, you know, maybe in my opinion, not given the respect on the way out that guys of their status and stature and high character deserved.
I do think there was a stretch there. A lot of those names he just rattled off, other than he kind of casually slipped Randall Cobb's name in there as just like one last reminder that they need Randall Cobb to succeed for some reason this season. But most of those names he rattled off were from like 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, and that was the stretch where the Packers weren't keeping guys and they weren't signing anybody in free agency.
It's just, it was such a smarmy way of putting it, though. Like, I wanted to teach the organization to learn from their mistakes. I wanted to show them all the things they did wrong and how they can improve.
Good luck teaching an NFL team.
I don't know, man. It's a 29-minute press conference like that where the entire press conference essentially is you running down the organization.
But don't you think it's better that he did all of it now rather than seethe for the next 17 weeks? Like, if he didn't get it off his chest.
Yeah, no, I'm impressed that he went out and said all this. He could have just said, like, you know, I'm here now. I'm not talking about what happened. We got it settled, and we'll talk about it in the offseason.
Yeah. Well, you can text us your thoughts on Aaron Rodgers to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. We'll come back and debate what the future is of the Pac-12. We at least got a little bit of insight from the new Pac-12 commissioner. That's next. Bickley and Murata Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Bickley and Murata.
Oh, we had Pac-12 Media Day yesterday. Luke Lipinski, Jarrett Carlin in for Bickley and Murata. And we played you some of the clips from Herm. Just not, I wouldn't say anything unexpected. I would say of the press conferences we've talked about today, Aaron Rodgers was the one that delivered us the most talking points. But in terms of the direction of the conference as a whole, and not so much just ASU, I mean, you have Texas and Oklahoma eventually leaving the Big 12 for the SEC, and there's been a lot of speculation what exactly that would mean for the Pac-12. Like, are they going to lose teams? Do they need to go after some teams and sort of be preemptive about it? George Kliavkov, the new Pac-12 commissioner, was asked exactly what this means now just for college football and the landscape in general.
We believe the move by Texas and Oklahoma from the Big 12 to the SEC strengthens our unique position as the only Power 5 conference with teams in the Mountain and Pacific time zones. We have a stable, highly successful, and well-positioned membership with a high bar to entry. Given our investments in football and men's basketball, and our historic domination of other sports, we do not think expansion is required to continue to compete and thrive. That said, the fallout from Texas and Oklahoma gives us an opportunity to once again consider expansion, and we've already had significant inbound interest from many schools. We will work with our presidents and chancellors to evaluate these opportunities. We expect these decisions to take some time, and we will not be sharing any further information today about ongoing expansion discussions.
That was such a commissioner answer, wasn't it?
Yes, of course.
Everything was so measured, and he's like, I don't know if you know this, but we have schools in the Mountain and Pacific time zones.
Some schools are in both.
Why doesn't that ever come up when we're trying to get a team in the college football playoff? And they're like, should it be Oregon or should it be Auburn? But the Pac-12, they have schools in both the Mountain and Pacific time zones.
It's almost as if that doesn't matter at all.
Oh,
for any reason at all with anything. Almost.
Almost. I mean, it might matter on the Pac-12 network if you could watch it, but that's
about
it.
How about the total dominance in the other sports other than basketball and football that he was mentioning?
But that at least matters more to me than the time zones, I got to be honest. What do you think, Jarrett, going forward? You think if you were running the Pac-12?
I think they have to expand, because if they don't, they risk
Be the expander or the expandee? Is that what you're going to say?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
You're either the Spanx or you're the...
I want to see where this goes.
Wait a minute.
I want to see where this goes.
The Spanx compress.
But I don't have a dump button in here, and you do.
You're either the Spanx or you're the love handles. And right now you want to be the expanders.
Is one of those better than the
other? I'm not sure. I don't know where I was going with that. But here's what...
I know where you were going. Sarah's eyes just got so big.
You want to be the Spanx, the love handles, or the person who turns off the radio? I want to be that last person.
Yeah, me too. Wait, no. Don't do that. But if you had to,
but
we would understand.
But don't you agree that, like, okay, in their minds, like, oh, we could still survive and be fine if we don't add teams?
Yeah.
But at this point, it's going to be, like, it's trending towards just bigger and bigger and less conferences. And if you don't want a team to come try and poach your best teams, you just build up your conference even bigger so that you're the team that's on the aggressive.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's just the reality of college football now. But what I don't want is to be like, hey, we got Iowa State, but we lost Oregon. You know what I mean?
Like, of course.
You need to be... You need to not only be preemptive, but you need
to
protect what you have.
Like if the Big 12 is like, oh, we're adding Boise State and BYU.
Yeah.
People that we've talked about like for the Pac-12. But we're losing Texas and Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Okay, you might be able to survive a few more years as a conference, but it's not an equal two for two. So if you're the Pac-12, you know, bolster up your thing so that teams don't come trying to poach you.
It would be ridiculous for, like, USC to be in the SEC. Like, it would just be so geographically absurd.
But they're beyond that.
But that's what I'm saying.
And they've been beyond that for a long time with all these conferences.
If this gets too crazy.
The ACC goes from Syracuse to Miami.
Yeah, and that is
crazy.
That's
as far as you could be.
But you can't have a Southeast conference with a team on the Pacific Ocean in your conference and still try to pretend that we're having conference. I'm just saying if it got to that point, you may as well just have one like 32 team league, just like the NFL, and then just have these other.
I guess, the Southeast Conference already has teams in Texas and Missouri and stuff.
Yeah, but once you've spanned the entire country, just have one big conference, right?
It's trending that way.
I know.
Which is why you need to do what you need to do to survive.
If it gets much more out of control, that's when you have to start to worry as the Pac-12.
And also, it's not like the Texas schools wouldn't add something to the Pac-12.
Yeah, I think we're having two slightly different conversations. I agree with you on there. Like, add TCU and Baylor or whoever if you want to do that. But what I'm saying is, in terms of defending what you have, like, I understand the Pac-12 has been down in football the last few years, but you still have USC and Oregon, and those schools in Stanford, like those schools can never go anywhere.
UCLA.
Yeah.
Those are probably the four biggest.
Well,
I feel
UCLA's
like
UCLA is never really any good in football, but they
it's
should
still,
be.
It's a huge brand, though.
Yeah.
I mean, Stanford, those are huge brands. If you're looking at, like, Texas hasn't been a national title contender in literal, you know, decades, but they're a huge brand. UCLA, USC, I think those two the most, even more than Oregon, are the two biggest brands in the conference.
You think UCLA is a bigger brand than Oregon?
I think so.
Are you going across all the sports?
I mean, Oregon is more successful in football. But
Oregon is literally a brand. Like, their campus is just down the street from Nike.
Nike,
isn't
I know
it?
I know. They're the Nike brand.
Yeah.
I just feel like they need to be aggressive. Don't be content. I think the problem too much with the Larry Scott era was that they were too content with what they had. And you can hear it even with some of the answers. When you asked Larry Scott about the distribution deal for the Pac-12 network, he was like, oh, we're doing good. It's great. And we'll be in such great position in 2024 because we own our own network. We're not tied into the different ESPN or something like that. Whereas if Klyavkov said, wow, this sucks so bad. I cannot wait till 2024 when we can get out of it and we can try to get a much, much, much better deal.
Yeah, you know, when we're trying to promote our product, so we're going to put it on TV where people can watch it and not just hide it.
Well, as you know, being the only conference with schools in the Pacific and Mountain Time Zone.
Oh, that's true. Well, you really want to
make it
to
so only
that.
People in those time zones could stay awake to watch your.
Well, but
product.
Then also when they do, they can't find it anywhere. And I gotta say, I'm one of the few people I know that actually has the Pac-12 network. But I almost feel bad when I can watch it because I'm like, well, nobody else in Arizona or California can. So what's the point of even having it? And then when you do go to watch it, it's just a replay from 1974.
Or it's a coach going, dip, 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 dip.
No, sometimes that happens. All right, you know what's coming up, Jarrett? Social studies. Yeah, that's right. That's next. It's the Bickley and Murata Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.